Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by Community Radio WERU, 89.9 FM Blue Hill, and at weru.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's episode, we meet Mainers dedicated to creating art to beautify their towns, as well as a leader in the art and craft of model railroading. Hello, Annette Dodd. You are the president of an organization called Bangor Beautiful. So I think that's a wonderful name, has all sorts of pleasing connotations. Can you describe your organization and its mission and maybe its origin story?
Yes, thank you for having me. So Bangor Beautiful creates and cultivates projects that beautify Bangor, Maine, as simply as that. We're a nonprofit. We're about 4 years old. And I was co-founder with Greg Edwards. And we just wanted to create a nonprofit that's focus was to beautify Bangor through community, public art, and planting native trees and plants.
That's wonderful. So what was the catalyst for this organization's founding?
Well, I had been painting murals. I had actually painted the Greetings from Bangor, Maine postcard mural and the Bangor Wants You Calling All Creative People mural, which is a Paul Bunyan pointing like Uncle Sam. And I had painted these murals because I wanted to live in a city that embraced public art. I wanted to see more public art. And so I decided to start being the change. And I painted these murals. And then out of that, I had been volunteering a lot through the downtown. I have a business in downtown. And so I had been volunteering a lot to beautify and help create the beautification committee in the downtown. And then out of that, I found a muralist. It was actually Peter Walls. I collaborated with Peter Walls, who is an artist out of the Stockton Springs area. And we did a mural called the Kanduskeag Stream Trail Mural, which is a really great mural. I wanted to see other people's art on the wall, not just mine. And so Peter Walls, I was showing him in my gallery, and I decided that I should do a collaboration with him. And so we did this amazing mural on the side of when you're coming out of the post office by the courthouse in Bangor, Maine. It's on Franklin Street. And he, when we were all done, told me about a great artist friend of his called Matt Willey, who had been doing a project called The Good of the Hive. And Matt Willey did the largest mural to date in Bangor. We brought him in and decided we should bring The Good of the Hive to Bangor. And he has pledged to paint 50,000 bees in his lifetime, the number of a healthy hive. He's about halfway through. And so when I heard of the project, I knew this was what I wanted to bring to Bangor. I also knew that it was going to require a lot of fundraising and figuring out how to do that. And luckily, Greg Edwards, my good friend and a volunteer partner in life, knew a little bit about nonprofit, and we decided it was time. So we made this nonprofit to bring muralists to the area.
That's wonderful. I have noticed in my journeys back and forth to Bangor that things look much different than they did 5, 6, 7 years ago. So congratulations. It's beautiful. So today we're talking about public art, which I guess I'm talking to the very right person. And can you define public art for our listeners?
Public art is art that is free and in a public location for all to enjoy. It can be just about any type of art, and it could be on the ceiling, on the side of a building, on the floor. It is literally just art that is free and accessible to the public, would be how I would describe it.
Okay. And I guess that has a pretty broad definition when it comes to what is art, and we won't go there today, but yeah, it could be a lot of different things. So what are some of your installations? Or I know you talked about the murals that you painted and that Peter Willie painted and so forth, but what other things are out there?
Well, for us, mostly we've been doing murals. We have actually started to do a little bit of community building through fixing up the Welcome to Bangor signs. So there were these signs that were installed, 20 plus years ago, and definitely looked that way. They were just, chipping paint and really lackluster, and being the welcome signs to our town, we said, let's fix these up. So we have slowly been going to every welcome sign, repainting it, and then we go in and we plant a native pollinator garden nearby with native plants as well as trees to help fix up the area.
For the good of the hive, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Every project that we have done for the past 3 years, we have made sure that we incorporate some sort of planting nearby. We strongly believe in street trees for another beauty and beneficial to everyone, public health in general. So we try to plant native plants or native trees nearby to beautify in other ways besides just adding the public art.
Mm-hmm. Have you done anything in any of Bangor's parks?
Let me think here. The park's not as much that I can think of. Well, we have one mural that was actually done on the side of a building. The first mural we did with a school, we worked with the Abe Lincoln School, and we went in and collaborated with the teachers. The teachers taught the students about the importance of pollinators, and then they painted and drew pollinators that then the artists, and again, it was Peter Walls, incorporated into a larger mural that we cut out of marine plywood and then brought back in. And I volunteered for a week with the children, and every single child in the class was able to paint on the mural. And so it's this huge 30-foot mural that then we installed on the wall of the school that faces the Chaplin Park in Bangor. So I guess that would be a park installation on that one. And since then, we've also worked with the Downey School to put a mural on that school as well.
Where's that located? Where's Downey School?
The Downey School is kind of tucked away. It is in the Cape part of the area. So down in by where, like, there's a new little water park down there as well. Mm-hmm. If you're unfamiliar with it, there's the east side and the west side, and we try to switch back and forth between the two.
Very good. Yeah. So are your artworks generally just, it's collaborative with students in this case. Can artists submit ideas to your organization?
So we're new, and yes, as of right now, we usually find artists and work with community artists around here, but we are open to the idea of an artist, reaching out and saying, I have an idea for a mural. It's really helpful when they have a location as well, because sometimes that's the hardest part, is finding the right location for the public art. Mm-hmm. But we have worked with a lot of local artists in the area. We actually just finished the Waterfront Concerts venue. It has a really long fence that was unpainted, and it was kind of something you just didn't really want to look at. And so we worked with them to paint the fence, and then we added 20 local artists, 4-foot by 4-foot paintings in the theme of Maine, as well as Jared Goulette did a, we hope you have a wicked good time, a real Maine saying on the side of the fence. So That was a great way to work with local artists there. But yeah, if you're interested in working with us, you can send us an email, bangorbeautiful@gmail.com.
Are you involved with the umbrellas over that one little
street?
No,
that's a great project that the Downtown Bangor Partnership does. They're one that brings the artists into town to do that.
Do you have any sculpture installations yet or not yet?
No, not as of yet. So I'm a muralist, and so I come at it from, you know, helping and bringing more muralists to the area. But I'm not opposed to a sculpture, but we just have to figure it out. The best part about being new is that we can create and cultivate still. We're not 100% formed, you know, and as you said, art is still, I think art's still being formed exactly what it is. So yeah, we're open to just about anything. We have a public art committee meeting. Actually, it's tonight that I'm going. And we encourage people to come with ideas and energy as well, because it does take, you know, takes a village to make these murals and these public art projects happen.
It does. Now, you mentioned that you have a store downtown or a business downtown. So tell us a little bit about you, Annette. What do you do for fun and profit? I mean, you're a muralist, but is that your full-time occupation?
No, it is not. In fact, I have yet to be paid for a mural. So it is not my occupation, and it's completely separate from the nonprofit. But I co-own the Rock and Art Shop and Soane's Gallery. So I have, and I've been doing that for a while now. We're going on 18 years having a shop. But before that, I was an art teacher for close to 10 years. So that's what brings me to the arts.
So that, so you come by your work with the children in the schools, quite honestly.
I do. In fact, I have a lot of fun going back for just 1 week and being in the schools, and, you know, it's definitely an art commanding that many kids to do, you know, to paint in and to work with all of that. We also have two art teachers on the board. So we have Susan Bryant, who is the art teacher at the Bangor High School, and Kat Johnson, who's the art teacher at the Brewer High School. And we definitely include those high school students in a lot of our projects. We just finished a work with the Maine Audubon, where Allison Ross, who is a Machias artist, she did 5 Maine birds on the side of a State Street and Broadway wall. Mm. And it's a huge mural as well. And then in between, we had the art students from Brewer, Bangor, and Copscook create a food chain. So they had a chance to make these 2x2 foot panels of what the bird eats. So we had like a woodcock on the wall that was very large. And then there's a color block, and the Copscook Bay students were able to do worms and snails and different Maine creatures, trying to tie it all back in to native plants as well. We were able to plant actually $5,000 worth of native plants around that area and 18 native trees to help bring some wildlife habitat back into an area that had lost it.
So that brings me to the point. What is your funding base? Obviously, if you're spending $5,000 on plants.
Well, that one came through collaboration. I strongly believe that if you want to make change, you've got to, you know, collaborate, reach out, work with as many people as possible. So this one, we collaborated with Maine Audubon Fields Pond, which is our closest Maine Audubon to us. And they were able to write the grant for the plants. And we were able to write a grant, and we received it, which is exciting. It's the first big grant that we received from the Maine Arts Commission. And we're pretty excited about that. It took a while to figure out the grant writing process. We've applied a couple times, but this was the first one that we were able to get. And that helped out so much. Having a little bit of funding goes a long way to fundraising.
Yes.
Sometimes when you're planning these murals, you're planning them a year out, and you have to do a down payment in order to book the artist. And that first down payment is always a little terrifying when you look at the bank account and you're like, oh, we've got some fundraising to do. And then the rest of it we do through sponsorships and donations. We're working on an ever beautiful campaign, as we call it, a little nod to, you know, public access. They had an evergreen fund. And so we're looking for some sort of way to have people give us a small amount each month to help beautify Bangor.
That's wonderful. Yes, fundraising is its own pursuit for sure.
Yes.
And I would imagine, though, that the businesses in downtown Bangor join hands with you, and it can only be good for business.
Yeah, we have, as of right now, we have a few businesses that always sign up to help. They see the value. You know, it's very easily one of the bigger draws to the area. We're starting to have people come in and look for the murals. We're becoming a destination for many reasons. I mean, we have a free art museum open to the public in downtown, and a lot of great things in downtown, but it's definitely starting to be a draw, all the public art. So I think people are realizing the benefits, especially business owners and building owners are starting to see that having a public work of art on your building is definitely an asset.
Yes. And to coin a phrase, paint it, they will come, right?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So does Bangor Beautiful at the moment sponsor art walks or similar kind of events?
We do not sponsor art walks. I personally do work with an organization that's just now getting started to do art walks. We are starting them up every first Friday during the warmer months again. We are looking to do more community art building events. So it might be something we look into in the future. As of right now, we've been out straight with the public, you know, the murals and the plantings, but that is something that builds community and is needed. And so it's something that's another volunteer hat that I wear.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, how can our Creative Maine listeners find Bangor's murals and other public art? How can you get involved with Bangor Beautiful and donate time to the mural painting process?
You can check out bangorbeautiful.org. Our website has it all there. We have grown so much in the last 4 years that it takes a bit of navigating, but it's all there. And it tells you about our public committee meetings. We have a trees and bees meeting, as well as a public art committee meeting that meets every month. And we take, you know, we welcome anyone willing to come and, like I say, share ideas and maybe a little energy. And we also do these public murals where we have volunteers come. So we actually did the largest volunteer mural was a 75 plus volunteers from the community helped us paint in a road mural on the side of the Wabanaki Public Health and Wellness Building. So we definitely use community support. And we're also on social media platforms, Bangor Beautiful.
What a great way to get some new friends if you've moved to the area. Go join a painting party and have a blast. What fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been a lot of fun. I will never drive through Bangor with the same mindset ever again. I'll be craning my neck to look for the murals. And That's just wonderful work that you do, and all the best luck in the future.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. The Bangor Band will present the annual Sounds of the Season concert on Sunday, December 14th at 3 p.m. at Peaks Auditorium in Bangor. Preceding the band concert at 1 p.m. will be Bangor's second annual Tuba Christmas. If you haven't heard dozens of live tubas playing holiday carols, you just haven't lived. For more information about these free, family-friendly holiday concerts, visit bangorband.org. On Wednesday, December 3rd, the Castine Town Band will present its annual Christmas concert at Emerson Hall in Castine from 7 to 8 p.m. The concert is a beloved community tradition to kick off the holiday season. For more information, contact the Castine Town Office at 207-326-4502. The Monday Night Jazz Orchestra, also known as Mojo, will be performing twice in the holiday season, November 29th at 2 p.m. at the First Baptist Church in Belfast, and on December 6th at 2 p.m. at the John Street United Methodist Church in Camden. Come out to hear local musicians and get into the holiday spirit. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU, 89.9 FM and on weru.org. Next, we chat with Amanda Cunningham to learn about an organization whose mission is to beautify Belfast, Maine. Welcome, Amanda Cunningham. You are the executive director of the organization called Our Town Belfast. And we would love for you to describe your organization and its mission and maybe a little of its origin story.
Sure, that would be great. Our Town Belfast is a Main Street, an accredited Main Street organization. We are accredited by Main Street America, which has nearly 2,000 Main Streets across the country. They are a 40-year-old organization that just believes in preserving your historic commercial districts. They came about during the early 80s when there was so much urban sprawl and malls and downtowns got left behind. Mm-hmm. So Our Town Belfast has been in existence for 15 years. We just celebrated our 15th anniversary last month. And what we do is promote everything that's going on in our historic commercial district. If it's something we're promoting or something that we're hosting, or if it's something that anybody else is hosting, we'd love to talk about it.
So tell us a bit about you. You've been on the job here for 3 years. So what did you do before that? What brought you to the space?
So I am Belfast born and raised. I left during the early 90s after I graduated from high school and went to college and didn't return until 2014 when I had my own daughter, because, you know, living in Portland at the time was great when it was just me. But when I had a child and a husband, it was much nicer to come back here. Mm-hmm. And I wanted her to be raised in the same place that I was able to walk downtown when I was, you know, 10 years old and feel safe and know everybody. And luckily she's done exactly that. She's now 13 and everybody downtown knows who she is. So that's a really great part of living here. And when this position came up 3 years ago, I was working as the marketing director at the Waldo County YMCA. And I had just been looking for what's going to be my next move. I had left the private sector where I was working in product development when I left Portland. So coming back and then getting into nonprofit work was a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is.
It's pretty stressful sometimes, but it's so great to be able to give back to the community that I love so much.
I always said in my own journey in nonprofit and arts that it gives you a really good reason to get up in the morning, whereas somebody else's bottom line might not.
That's really true. It's very, very true. You know, I love being able to interact with people on the same level. That's what's different for me, because everything that I'm doing, it impacts so many people. But when I was doing product development, it was only the people that wanted to buy that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. So today we're particularly interested in public art, which is art that's out there, free for the public to interact with and enjoy. And I know that Belfast has actually quite a bit for a smaller town. So can you describe some of our town, Belfast's public art initiatives and things that you've done in that vein?
Public art is a key component to any Main Street organization. We follow 4 points, and one of them is design. So we have a whole committee that we talk about what we want to do for how we want to make downtown an inviting place for people to come, and art is always central to that. Mm-hmm. We also want to have it, because being in a rural community, we want to have public art exposure to people that, to break down that barrier, walking into a gallery or a museum or something where we don't have those. So it's just a really great way to connect with people. In 2021, we did a crosswalk project that was 5 painted crosswalks. They were gorgeous. They were beautiful. They were just really, really outstanding. They were along Main Street or just adjacent to Main Street. It was, you know, when everybody was starting to really travel after COVID, and they were traveling regionally mostly. So it was really impactful. It was a great project, but they were so detailed that we weren't able to maintain them over time. So mm-hmm. we've kind of cut back on that project. And so the following year, we went with something new called the Sit Down Belfast Project, where we redesigned an Adirondack chair to have, we lifted the seat, made them wider, made them much more accessible for anybody. And we had 15 painted chairs that are all around town. And we added another 5 in 2023. They come out every year. They're still out right now, but Public Works will be storing them away for us for the winter here any day now. Mm-hmm. And those have been really, really wildly successful as well.
They're very fun. I've seen them all over the place.
They're so unique. None of them, there's no two alike. They're great. We look forward to finding other ways to, like, as they cycle out, how do we continually replace them? Because we want to be able to keep that. We're on a hill. We want people to have a place to sit down when they're walking up the hill.
Yeah, for sure. And plus there's beautiful views everywhere.
Right. Yeah. You definitely get a lot of things to see. And then one of the bigger things that we do, well, it is actually the biggest thing that we do, mm-hmm. is annually at the last weekend of February, we host the Belfast Ice Festival. We have dozens of ice sculptures all around downtown. The majority of them are purchased from a company in New Hampshire, but we also get several that are live carved throughout the day by a gentleman out of Rockport. His name is Tim Pierce. He works on the artwork on his own and then comes and then creates it live for everybody to see. It's really, really cool. And then we also have a carving competition with different people, 10 different people that come down and create their own piece or carve their own piece of ice. Last year we had a fish. There was I can't remember all the things that were last year. All the years run together.
I get you.
That's a lot of fun because we get to watch people carve it for 4 hours. They use hand tools and sometimes mechanical tools as well.
I'm here to tell you ice carving is not easy. I took a culinary degree, and as part of that, we had to do an ice sculpture just to learn how, and, you know, in case we should be in some sort of, I don't know, cruise ship kitchen or something. Yeah. And it is not easy. It's a real trick.
It's really cool. So the company that we get them from in New Hampshire, they come over on Friday and start placing them out. Well, they come over on Thursday night and we get on the ground first thing, like 8 o'clock in the morning on Friday. And they just start taking them out of these crates, and they've done the majority of the work. But then to watch them do all of the fine lines and just really bring it to life, they get blow torches out and they have chainsaws. They have all these little like Dremel tools and everything. It's really it's so cool to see. I can't even imagine how their mind works to be able to envision that.
It's pretty amazing. Do various businesses like buy a sculpture to put in front of their business or sponsor a sculpture? How does that work?
That's exactly how it works. So we each ice sculpture is sponsored individually by a community member or by a business. Mm-hmm. We also take a collection for businesses that don't have, because this year they cost $500, but some businesses want to be a part of it, but they only have 25. So we collect all of that and then put that together for one big group sculpture.
Okay,
yeah,
$500
for each sculpture. That's the artist or the cost to purchase it, as well as have it shipped over here and then help with some of the administrative costs.
So for $500, you want as many people as humanly possible to see that sculpture before it melts.
We sure do. So last year, we're estimating nearly 4,000 people were in town for the weekend. With a community that's got 7,000 as residents, we're pretty happy with that.
That's great. So what other things are you anticipating doing in the future?
So I actually, the meeting that I had this afternoon was out at the Waldo County Technical Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not ever been through there. And I just wanted to discuss with them how we can use those students going forward and what different projects we could do. So a couple of things that we came up with. They have a graphic design department. So I'm going to start working with them for new posters and banners, different things that we can do along that vein, and then maybe build some little libraries for us for our public parks. We also have a pocket park, a privately owned pocket park. They, I would give them a little bit of guidance, but they would come up with the design and the painting. They would do the whole thing themselves, which I think is really, really cool. And then we also talked about the chairs, because we've been buying that from large manufacturers, the wood. They cut it all down for us and everything. But if that's something that the technical center could do for us, we would love to have them. And then we would still put it out to the artists that we always have worked with to see if they want to paint them. But I think it's a great opportunity to utilize students and really give back again to the local community.
Absolutely. And then a student can say to their family or whatever, this is the chair that I made.
Oh, they were so proud. They loved showing off all the work they were doing in there. It was just really cool to see some of the stuff.
Oh, yeah. And they have a lot of great programs there for sure.
I was overwhelmed with it. I was so happy to have gotten a tour.
So I'm looking at who the artists are who are involved. Now, you were talking about commissioning for the chairs. What other artists do you commission?
So all of our art, we do a open call for submissions, and then we do a judging to select who we're going to work with. We typically have the same artists come back time and time again. They're all local, all from Waldo County, mostly from Belfast or at least the surrounding towns. I think it just really speaks to them having a great connection with downtown.
There aren't many communities with such a vibrant downtown, I must say.
I take a lot of pride in that.
Yes. And, WERU helps with the Celtic Festival and other big goings on there. And it's a wonderful spot for all that kind of thing. So do you get grants? How are your initiatives funded?
So as an organization with a staff member of just one, that's really hard to complete most day-to-day operations, let alone manage grant funding. We typically stay away from grants. We did, for the crosswalk project in 2021, we did receive Maine Community Foundation's Maine Expansion Arts Grant, and that's what funded that. We've applied for it subsequently and have not received it. But that's okay, because again, then I'd have to manage it. We did recently just receive information or confirmation that we are receiving the Creative Communities Grant from Maine Arts Commission to do some programming down in a pocket park right down here on Main Street called Brigham Green. We've done a couple of things, and the Poetry Festival last weekend was down there, and we're looking at different ways we can incorporate some more artwork down there starting next spring. Soon enough, we're going to have snow on the ground. So
who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen? But community sponsors, I'm sure you get quite a few.
We get a lot of local businesses and communities, individual community members. First National Bank has been a huge partner for us. They are the overall sponsor for the chair project. And then each of those chairs has an individual sponsor. The chairs themselves cost about $600, which includes the artist fee. So that that sponsorship offsets those costs. We really wouldn't be able to do it without it.
Yeah, $600 is a lot for an Adirondack chair.
I know.
But they're custom designed, though, you were saying.
Exactly. And we paid the artist $300 for their work.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Some of it goes to their supplies, but I think they're able to take some of it. But they put a lot of time and effort into these. So, you know, each chair also has a little plaque with the first as the sponsor, the business sponsor, and then each of the artists that worked on them.
Okay, great. So they get some notoriety in that way,
yes,
too. Great. So does Our Town Belfast sponsor art walks or similar events?
And we do not sponsor. Sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, do you have anything special coming up in the holiday season?
We do not sponsor the art walk, but Belfast does host a Fourth Friday art walk from May to October. That's organized by the local artists and the galleries. A few of our galleries promote it year round. The only role that we play in it is to help promote it and get the word out there for people. It used to be really, really vibrant because, like you said, we have a dozen art galleries downtown.
Wow, that
for
many.
Artists. So and they all want to be a part of it. It's just a matter now of getting people downtown for a Friday night. That's kind of hard in the summer. It's I think it does a little bit better in the fall because it's not as hot.
Sure.
So that's what we have going on for art walks. And then I think the other question was about the holidays.
Yeah.
We don't have any art related things going on the holidays. We host our tree lighting and menorah lightings. Those are the big things that we do, as well as we have a promotional sale the first Saturday of December called the Early Bird Sale. That just brings everybody out in their pajamas with their coffee to go shopping.
That's great.
It's a lot of fun.
So how can our Creative Maine listeners find Belfast's public art, and how can someone get involved with Our Town Belfast?
So the easiest way to find all the public art is just to come visit our historic downtown commercial district and walk around. There's so much to see that's beyond what Our Town Belfast has created. We have several murals to discover. Some are really small, like a tiny little black and white cat that's on a door frame, to a door that's painted to the side of a building. We have stuff all over the place. There's stuff that I don't even remember that is there sometimes, and I walk by and I go, oh, well, I forgot about that, and I have to take a picture. And then if you wanted to be involved, you know, I would say visit ourtownbelfast.org. That will show you all of the stuff that we're doing. You can learn more about us as a Main Street organization. And it also would give you the opportunity to sign up to be a volunteer because we're always accepting more. We have four committees as well as the Ice Festival committee, and that's a lot of work. So anybody that ever wants to get involved, we would gladly accept them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Amanda Cunningham, for being on Creative Maine. This is a wonderful initiative. I hope people can come out and view what you have wrought and get involved. It's fantastic. So
thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And hopefully we can talk again.
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. Have a great holiday season.
Thank you. You too.
Welcome, Joey Kelly. You are the president of the Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club, and I'm so very glad to have you on Creative Maine today. We are preparing to talk a little bit about a big show that the Railroad Club is going to be having, but in the meantime, I'd like to talk a little bit about you, about the art and craft of model railroading, and other bits of very interesting stuff. So tell us a bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to be president of this club.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And it is a great pleasure to be on WERU, as I really love community-supported radio. So we'll just say that as the blanket disclaimer at the top of the show. We'll get that out of the way.
Beautiful.
As to a bit about myself, I have been interested in trains since I was, to borrow a phrase from my adopted grandfather, knee-high to a grasshopper. I have pictures of me at somewhere between 4 and 6 years old running the model railroad in the basement, and those are cherished childhood memories. That evolved through the years into an interest in railroad history, into an interest in railroad photography, stepped away from the model trains a little bit in there, and then came back as, quite frankly, the variety and volume of real trains in the general Bangor, Maine area has dropped considerably. I have been actively photographing trains in the Bangor area for over 20 years, and it's actually coming up on 25, and the volume has dropped dramatically. We no longer have the Bucksport paper mill. That was a source of trains. We no longer have the Old Town paper mill. That was a source of trains. It's really changed. And when you have less to photograph and less to do in the real world, you go, well, maybe I should get into model trains again. And I joined the Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club a few years ago and said to myself, well, this is definitely an organization that I can be a part of and be proud to be a member of. And when the opportunity came up to become an officer, I stepped up to become vice president. And then one day found myself as president in the big chair and bought a gavel and have not looked back. And unfortunately, the gavel doesn't come through in our online meeting, so I don't even get to use it.
Oh, well, that's too bad. How old is the club? When was the club established?
Funny you should ask. Next year, 2026, is our 50th anniversary.
Wow.
So the club is actually older than I am, which is a wonderful thing. And we are planning in our 50th year to be a little bit bigger, a little bit bolder, a little bit more available to people and do some special things as part of our, you know, 5 decades. I mean, that's a celebration to be held, you know, for an organization to survive that long.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us a bit about the art and the craft of model railroading. It's not just about running trains around a track. I know there's a significant amount of artistry that goes into the landscapes, the backdrops, because there's a verisimilitude about a layout that makes you feel like you're in that place and in that time. And how do you manage that?
Well, I think personally that model railroading is both one of the most varied of artistic disciplines and also quite possibly one of the most underappreciated, simply because you get a lot of people that think, oh, it's just men and boys playing with their trains. And that it's there's an element of that, but there's a much larger element that shows genuinely how creative people can be and are. Stereotypically, what a lot of people that are not in the model railroading hobby think of, they think train running around the bottom of a Christmas tree. That's kind of the stereotype where they go. And that isn't incorrect. A lot of people do that. But what that breeds is a sense of this is a toy. This is a toy train. And there's nothing wrong with a toy train, but when you step from toy trains into model railroading, it's a quantum leap. It's the difference between reading a book and writing one. It's a huge change in your perception, your understanding, and your skill level, and what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And also, much like writing a book, there's usually rough drafts involved before you get it right.
Okay.
And it can be quite the process with a lot of failure and disappointment along the way. But
ask you how you know, right?
Ask me how I know. there's several pieces that I'm never going to show this to another living soul. We will never see this. We will never speak of this again. This will be on a shelf or a trash can, and it will never be talked of. And I'm not alone, trust me.
Oh, sure.
But the thing about the actual art of model railroading is that it includes so many things. It includes someone who has to do the background painting, okay, which is often freehand and done without a lot of references necessarily, or perhaps reference photos, but nothing else. You then have people that build buildings and structures, not just, you know, buildings, but bridges that are built to scale, that have to also support the physical weight of the model railroading equipment and be a scale representation of an actual bridge. Okay. So that's a whole layer to it. So there's engineering involved. In addition to it being cosmetic and creative, you then have people that paint the locomotives and the cars. And that's a whole discipline in of itself. There are, if you ever go look at real trains, you will discover that, oh yeah, that's a white one. Well, it's not really white. It's white, and then there's streaks of gray on it, and then there's streaks of dirt, and there's grease, and there's all these different colors. And that white car, quote, quote, isn't really white. And the black ones are almost worse because they show everything. So to right. get them to really look correct, you not only have to paint them, but then you have to weather them and make them look worn and used.
Mm.
And that's a whole level of discipline. And I don't know too many artists that would be willing to freshly paint their new painting and then rub chalk all over it to right. make it's it look old.
Also, isn't there a thing called railroad livery, depending on the actual railroad that you're trying to represent?
The livery is essentially the paint scheme, quote, quote, as it were. So that's your stripes, your railroad name, how the railroad did its numbers, what fonts were used, what colors exactly were used. One of the we're going to allude to this a little bit later, I think, in some of the questions. But there's various types of railroad, model railroading. It's not one genre, much like, for instance, painting. There's impressionists, there's, you know, cubists, there's all these different disciplines. And this is much the same. There are people who it is their sole mission in life. I'm serious. This is how serious they take this, that the whatever building, boxcar, locomotive, whatever will be exactly correct. Mm-hmm. There will be no deviance from how it was upon the actual rails of the railroad. Mm-hmm. And if I'm making it sound like this is a crusade with them, it is.
Yeah.
There are people that's what they enjoy. There are other people that enjoy sort of a more freelanced approach, which that's actually what we call it. Freelanced model railroading is where you simply create your own world.
Well, that's what you have, right? Yeah. You have the Katahdin Valley Railroad.
Not exactly, because there's a middle ground.
Okay, so tell us about this magical
world of the Katahdin Valley. Yes.
Yes.
So within the groups, like I was saying, there's prototype people that really want it the way it really was. Then you've got freelance people that do things that basically create their own universe. In the middle is the middle ground called proto-freelancing, literally taking both. And it's where you tend to take real places but change the railroad or put a railroad in where there never was one.
Mm-hmm.
Or some variation of that. One of the more famous examples came out of Pennsylvania. There was a line that was constructed, chartered, bridges were built, but they never laid any tracks. So a couple of people have said, well, what if? And then built model railroads around those locations. What we did at the Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club when we were formed was to create the Katahdin Valley Railroad, which is a fictional railroad. It's our club railroad. Doesn't actually exist. And it's kind of a a pun, if you will, if you think about it, because Katahdin, tallest point, valley, lowest point, sort of a play on words almost. But that is typical. A lot of railroads were named after locations, Bangor and Aroostook, Belfast and Moosehead Lake, Katahdin Valley. It all kind of rolls off the tongue. And the premise of the railroad is based sort of in reality, in that a group of people bought sections of the main Central Railroad and sections of the Bangor and Aroostook Railroad and combined it into a single railroad to be operated as the Katahdin Valley. Mm-hmm. The nice part about that is that it allows us to take actual locations like Searsport and create a model of that that isn't exactly correct, because it's not the real Searsport, it's our Searsport.
Sure.
And we get to run the kinds of cars and trains into our Searsport that we wish we could have run in real life.
Sure.
And it allows us a lot of creativity. It allows us to not be so devoted to that prototype that we can't do something fun.
Absolutely. So let's ask you about what you've got in the clubhouse. So you've got this Katahdin Valley Railroad in your clubhouse, and how does that work?
Well, essentially, you come into the Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club building. As if you come in as a member, you're allowed to bring your own locomotives and your own cars in, and you can simply just run a train around the layout if you wish, or you can come in and you can sign up on the day to run one of our scheduled trains. The idea of our operating session days is that we have a series of trains that are all run in a prototypical type fashion. This is another facet of model railroading. There are people like myself that are very focused on operations. We want it to look and feel and act like a real railroad, even though it isn't. And in the case of, say, BK3, which is the Bucksport 3 job, that you take a certain number of locomotives, a certain number and type of cars. You move it from this position to this position on the layout. You have to exchange those cars for cars of the same type, and then haul the whole thing back to where you started, and that completes the job, which is very similar to how real railroads are run. Mm-hmm. Wow. And you can do that with your own locomotives. You can borrow locomotives. We run everything at our layout with what is known as DCC, Digital Command Control, which allows us to operate multiple trains on the same track at the same time, going in different directions and operated by different operators.
Wow. So that's a lot of dovetailing. So nobody meets by accident, as it were.
And it happens. And it's can be expensive when it happens. So we try to avoid that.
Yes, hopefully when they meet, they're not running full throttle.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Well, tell me about the club's public face. I know that you do a show which you can talk about, and also public demonstrations. And I don't know if you have invitations to the clubhouse, or how does that all work?
In general, currently, we don't really do much at the clubhouse. However, we do have an open policy. We generally meet on Monday nights for our operating session nights. That's separate from our meetings. Our meetings are our business meetings, where we discuss the business and the financials of the club. Those are held online Zoom, and they are members only, essentially. Okay. But our Monday night operating systems sessions, are open to basically anyone. You just need to tell us you're coming.
Okay,
and we'll
cool.
make sure that someone's there. We have a Facebook page you can reach out to us. We have a website with emails that you can reach out to us. We are located in Orland, Maine. And we are actively looking for new members. So if you are in the area and want to check us out on a Monday night, give us a heads up and we'll make sure someone's there.
Great. Well, tell us about your annual show. We went last year and had a whale of a good time. I'm here to attest. So tell us about this one coming up. It's November 22nd.
It is. It's always the Saturday before Thanksgiving every year. This is the 48th annual. Is that right? Yes. 48th annual show that we've had. There was 1 year that had to be taken off for COVID, and the first year of the club, they didn't have a show. So other than that, we've been continuous ever since. We have it at Jeff's Catering and Brewer, which is right off of 395. Set your GPS for Jeff's Catering and send you right to us. The show will be open from 10 to 3 on the 22nd, and we're going to have our club modular meaning sectional and movable layout will be there. We're going to have a kids layout available there for kids to run with supervision, don't worry. And we will have a variety of vendors there selling all kinds of things, from model trains to real railroad artifacts to information on places where you can go and things you can do, places you can donate to preserve railroad history. We will have a smorgasbord of railroad stuff for you to see and do at the show. $5 for adults. And that's anyone from age 12 and up. Under 12, free, with a paying parent or guardian of some type. So realistically, think about it. $5 in 2025, where are you going to go and spend $5?
The deal of the century. Absolutely.
Deal of the century. Come on by. Come see us at Jeff's Catering. There's snacks. There's all kinds of things to see and do. It's a wonderful time for everyone.
Great. So tell us where our Creative Maine listeners can find you and the club. You talked about your website. So how can one contact you either to come by and experience a Monday night or become an active member?
Please become an active member. Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club.org. Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club.org. You'll find us there. You'll also find us on Facebook at Eastern Maine Model Railroad Club, Inc. Essentially, Google us and you will find us somewhere.
Beautiful. Well, Joey Kelly, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on Creative Maine. And I hope you have an absolutely wonderful show this year and every year. Thank you.
Thank you for having us, and thank you. We'll see you at the show.
Thank you so much to my lovely guests, Annette Dodd, Amanda Cunningham, and Joey Kelly. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on WERU.org for another eclectic episode on Thursday, December 18th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, when we will learn about the art of crafting for good here in Maine. This is Adina Salmonson wishing you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy. Thank you.